Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
It's Free for All Friday, which means we get to explore a wide variety of diverse topics here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today what I want to talk about is what to do if you are detained or arrested by the police. What you should do. Hopefully, that's never happened to you. It may have happened to you. I have been detained by the police, but I've never been arrested. My wife has been arrested, actually. She's a little jailbird. She was, now don't get any ideas percolating in your mind. She was peacefully exercising her First Amendment rights to be on a highway showing images of abortion. And then she was arrested by, I think it was like Maryland state troopers, along with other members of the pro-life group that she was with. This was many, many years ago. And she was with them, and they were arrested, and I think some of them were strip searched even. And then later, they sued, collectively sued the state of Maryland, and won a judgment against them, actually, for a false arrest and improper conduct during their arrest. So maybe you've been detained by police, maybe you've been arrested. What do you do in those kinds of situations? I've dealt with law, you know, I deal with law enforcement every now and then, sometimes usually when I'm just at border patrol crossings. I used to deal with law enforcement a lot more when I was doing my pro-life field work, my pro-life mission work. I used to go out to university campuses, set up those big exhibits with pictures of the unborn before and after abortion. And sometimes security would be there. Sometimes police officers would be there at very rowdy campuses to make sure no one got hurt and everybody's rights were respected. And some of those officers were super helpful. I was so glad they were there. They were on our side. You know, they some of them I could tell they're probably pro-life and appreciated what we were doing. They didn't come right out and like support us or anything. They were being neutral observers, helping everyone to stay safe. But they were great. They were wonderful to have there. And then others were just completely useless. I remember one time I was at the University of California in Santa Barbara, a wonderful school, actually. And well, I don't know. The campus attitude was certainly not friendly to Christian values. I'll tell you that. We set up our big, ugly exhibit, and I think half the women and gender studies students had lined up to protest and encircle it. And they were getting really rowdy. One guy jumped over our barricade and took out a lighter and tried to set the exhibit on fire. Now, he wasn't going to really be able to set it on fire. It was made out of very thick polyurethane. So it's not the kind of stuff that a lighter is going to catch on fire. Even if you had more, I don't think you'd be able to set it on fire, really. But there was a police officer just standing by, and he didn't do anything. And I said, "Sir, that guy's trying to burn down our exhibit." He said, "Well, he has First Amendment rights, too." I was completely baffled by that. So that's the thing. Police officers, law enforcement, they're people. And just like people you meet and deal with in life, some are great, some are wonderful, some are not so great. And so we should have a particular kind of approach when we have interactions with law enforcement to make sure the common good is protected, everyone's rights are being respected. Now, my wife said to me, "Be sure to tell people I didn't want you to do this episode. You know, the police are out there every day. Don't give them a hard time, Trent." And I'm not giving them a hard time. Police officers have a super tough job. It is not a job I would be cut out for. One reason I know I wouldn't be cut out for it is I'm terrible at seeing if people are lying. I used to play this game with friends. It's called Secret Hitler. And they got it for me for my birthday, actually. I don't even know if you can order it online anymore. And it's basically like Mafia, where you're trying to find out amongst a group of people in this game who is secretly Hitler. And, you know, you play either, you know, different members of political parties in Germany, and you got to find out who the secret person is who's Hitler. It's like the game Mafia. So it's a game of deception. I'm terrible at seeing if people are lying to me. I can't read that. But police officers, they got to deal with that every day. People lie to them every single day. Every time they're dealing with people, it's usually a lie. And that's got to wear down on you. They put their lives on the line, put themselves in danger every time they're out there to keep our streets safe. And so I thoroughly respect that. And I'm glad that they do that. But at the same time, we have to remember that we live in the United States of America. And what's great about living in the USA is that we have fundamental personal rights and freedoms given to us through the Constitution that protect us and ultimately protect the common good. They protect all of us. These are rights like the right against unreasonable searches and seizures. Someone can't just come into my home and look for evidence for a crime without a warrant issued by a judge. You can't just come into my home and go through my things. You can't force me to go on a stand and testify against myself. I have the right to not say anything at all. And now some people think they don't understand that, right? They think, well, if a guy isn't going to go on the stand to defend himself, he's got to be guilty. That's not the case. A lawyer could twist your words. If you're on the stand, you could be forced to, while denying one crime, have to admit to a lesser crime or indiscretion you'd rather not share with other people. We have rights to remain silent, right to a speedy trial, right to a jury trial. These are all important freedoms we have, but they only really become our freedoms in some cases when we explicitly ask for them and even demand them. And it's for our benefit and the benefit of other people. And if a police officer is a good, solid individual and you're being kind and polite to them, which is a theme I'm going to reinforce over and over in today's show, they won't mind if you're peacefully and courteously exercising your rights. For example, I remember once I was pulled over in the state of Kansas. I think it was for speeding. And I was driving by myself. I was driving across country to Ohio to do my graduate program for the Franciscan University of Steubenville. So I had a ton of stuff in the car, a young, single male driving by himself, out of state plates. And though, so they suspected that I was a drug dealer. They thought I was smuggling drugs. And they said, well, we'll just search your car. You'll be on your way. I say, well, you know, officer, I really appreciate what you're doing here today. I appreciate you're out here keeping everybody safe, but I don't consent to any searches today. Well, in fact, before that, he looked at my license. He said, I just got a few questions for you, if you don't mind. And I said, that's great, officer, but I'd really rather be on my way now. Am I free to go? And the thing is, an officer has to let you go unless he's formally detaining you. And he cannot detain you unless he has some kind of probable cause. He's got something probable, some probable cause to, or I don't know if it's probable cause or reasonable suspicion. It has to be more than just a hunch. He's got to have something, a decent reason to detain you to be able to investigate more to see if you have committed a crime. So they brought like four other units came in, the canine units came in, and they said, you're acting pretty suspicious. You know, if you just let us look at your car, this will all be fine. I said, you know, I appreciate your work here, but I don't consent to any searches today. And they just looked at me and looked at each other. They looked at the guy with the canine going around my car, shrugged his shoulders, and they let me go. No, I didn't have contraband. I didn't have paraphernalia on me, or at least that's what I assumed I didn't have on me. And you may think that too. You may think that as well. You know, well, what's the harm in letting an officer search your home or search your vehicle for contraband, for weapons, for drugs? What's the harm? Well, here's the thing. There's no benefit. It's not like if a police officer searches your vehicle or home and they don't find anything, they'll say, good job, here's a gift certificate to Wendy's. Good job not committing a crime. You have absolutely nothing to gain. They're not your maid, so they don't have to do it gently. They can leave things a mess and you have to put it all back. But worse, maybe you didn't put something there. What if you let a friend borrow your car? Or someone else borrowed it, or someone, a valet borrowed it, or someone washed your car, a mechanic went into it and left something there or dropped something that is illegal that you didn't know about, or someone is staying with you in your home and has contraband you don't know about. You can't say, well, I've never seen that before. Sure, sure, that's what they all say. So that's the concern, which is why I highly recommend that if you are detained by police officers to not consent to searches. It cannot do you. Now, what a police officer can do is they can pat you down for weapons. And that's something if they think you have a weapon, they can pat you down to see if you have a weapon on you or something like that. But they can't search your person or your vehicle or your home without your consent or without a warrant. So I'll read you just a little bit here. This is from the ACLU, which, and of course, I disagree with the ACLU on a lot of things. They're always out defending abortionists and things like that. But at the same time, I think that they do have some sound advice. They say, you know, if you're stopped by police in public, you have the right to remain silent. The only thing you have to say in some places is your name. You don't have to say anything. You can say, I'm officer, I'm exercising my right to be silent and not say anything. If you're giving me an order, if you're giving me a command or an order, I will obey it. But you have to please be clear if it's an order that you're giving me. It goes on to say, you don't have to answer questions about where you were born or whether you're a U.S. citizen. The only place you have to do that is at Border Patrol. So I think somewhere within like 25, 50 miles of the border, at a border checkpoint, an officer can ask you if you're a U.S. citizen. And I get asked that a lot. That's why I'm always grateful when I can travel. I am a U.S. citizen. I just happen to have dark hair and darker skin. I get the question more and I get more questions given to me, but I've noticed whenever I drive through with my lovely blonde-haired, blue-eyed wife and my little lovely children in the back seat, there are no questions. When I'm by myself, they ask, and you have to, they can, if you don't say whether you're a U.S. citizen or not, they can detain your vehicle in long enough to verify if you are a U.S. citizen. But I just say, I am a U.S. citizen, but I'm choosing not to answer any other questions today. And, you know, just to be polite and courteous. That's what I would recommend if you are in an interaction where you are detained by police officer. You're driving, you're speeding, and you're being held, and you're being asked questions. Don't say anything. You know how fast you're going back there, officer. How fast was I going? Either ask a question or say, officer, I'm exercising my right to be silent. You ask any lawyer. You will never get in trouble for not saying anything, unless it's refusing to divulge your name to a police officer. In some jurisdictions, you have to tell them what your name is, for example, or Border Patrol if you're a U.S. citizen. So I would say in these situations, if you are being detained and the police officer is talking to you, just calmly and graciously assert your rights. And that's the key. Be polite. Don't be rude. Remember, these guys are putting their lives out on the line. They're trying, most of them, nearly all of them, are good men and women who are trying to uphold the law, protect us from criminals, and I want to help them do that, and I want to acknowledge that. So don't say like, oh, you're just out to trample on my rights today, you know, copper, like copper. I don't know, that's like a slur from like the 1950s. That copper is going to get you, eh? Don't have that. Just say, you know, officer, I always say, officer, I really appreciate what you're doing today. I know it's a lot of work, and I really appreciate that, but... and just say this, I am exercising my right to remain silent, and especially if an officer says, I just want to take a look in your car and, you know, you can be on your way. So I appreciate what you're doing, but I don't consent to any searches today. And it's important for you to articulate that, because here's the thing, even if a police officer illegally searches your vehicle, your person, your home, if you say I don't consent to a search, if let's say they find something incriminating, it may not even belong to you. If you have said you don't consent to a search, that could render the search invalid, unconstitutional, and can't be used against you later. Because that's the thing. Remember your Miranda rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say, really, it should be everything you say can and probably will be used against you in a court of law. And so that's important that you, it's important for you to have somebody who knows the law backwards and forwards to guide you through. That's why you have the right to an attorney, even if you can't afford one. Say, I choose to exercise my right to remain silent. I would like to speak to a lawyer right now, please. I can't say anything until I consult a lawyer first. I appreciate what you're doing, but I would like to speak to a lawyer, please. Please, thank you. I appreciate what you're doing. Those words will go a long way for you. And it just smooths everything out. And usually the officers say, okay, I don't see any trouble here. You're free to go. The absolute thing you should not do in a situation when you're detained by the police, though, is to run. The ACLU says, stay calm. Don't run, resist, or obstruct the officers. Do not lie or give false documents. Keep your hands where the police can see them. And that's important. When I'm pulled over by a police officer, what I do is I turn on the dome light inside of my car. I lower the window probably about a third of the way, and I place both hands on the steering wheel in the 10 and 2 position. The point is, keep your hands where the officer can see them, because I give them a lot of credit. There's people who shoot police officers at traffic stops. It's dangerous. I don't want to give him any reason to be afraid. I'm going to be polite, look forward, I have my dome light on, and I keep both hands in view on the steering wheel held at the 10 and 2 position. If he sees that, he knows that I am okay. So, as in your license and registration, I'll tell him what I'm going to do. Officer, I'm going to reach over with my right hand and open my glove box to take my registration out. I will leave my left hand on the steering wheel. And so just to narrate with him what he's going to do. If he's belligerent or rude, not to respond in kind, to say, what orders are you giving me? How can I comply with that? I would like to be able to help you so we can get through this. So calmly, politely, assert your rights so that everything can be resolved well for you and well for the police officer who 9 times out of 10 is trying to just do his or her job. But absolutely don't run. Don't turn this into an episode of Cops or Live PD. That is a guilty pleasure of mine to turn. Like when I travel, I don't have cable TV at home. So whenever I travel for speaking events, it's kind of a guilty pleasure when I get up to the hotel room. I always turn on the TV. I'm like, ooh, I wonder if Cops is on. And it's a little guilty pleasure to see like, oh, they're going to run. They're going to run just to see these wild situations I don't encounter in my own life, to see what happens there. And that's always a bad idea. Do not do anything like that. But let's say you are arrested. Let's say you're arrested, you're brought down to a police station, and you're accused of a crime you did not commit. What should you do? Here's the one thing you should not do. Don't talk to the police without a lawyer. Absolutely do not do that. Here's the thing. If the police should understand, they're not harming them, just waiting just a little bit of time. That's not going to kill anybody. To have a lawyer come to help you sort through and to make sure your rights are exercised, because you might think, oh, I got nothing to hide. I didn't do anything wrong. I'm going to tell them and everything's going to get resolved. You don't want to do that because false confessions, not even just confessing something that's incriminating and you don't know it, but falsely confessing to a crime you did not commit is not uncommon. It happens more than you think, and it happens to all kinds of people because we're not prepared. We're not psychologically prepared for what goes on in a police interrogation. A famous case of this you should definitely look up is the case of the Norfolk Four. According to Wikipedia, the Norfolk Four, this is in Norfolk, Virginia, are four United States Navy veterans, Joseph Dick Jr., Derek Tice, Daniel Williams, and Eric C. Wilson, who are known for having been wrongfully convicted in 1999 and 2000 on charges related to the 1997 rape and murder of Michelle Moore Bosco in Norfolk, Virginia. They each declared that they had made false confessions, and their convictions are considered highly controversial. So what happens, this poor woman was raped and murdered in her home, and the police suspected Joseph Dick originally. They suspected one of the men, got him in the interrogation room, had him in there for 8 hours all through the night. By 5 a.m., they brought in a police detective, and his name was Ford, and this guy later was found guilty of perjury, taking bribes. He was crooked. And he just basically bullied and got this guy to just broke him. He broke him. You imagine if you're up all night being accused of a crime, accused over and over and over again. It goes on for 8 hours. It's 5 a.m. You want to just get some sleep. And the guy said on the Norfolk Four, I think this was Joseph Dick Jr. He said, I just felt like I just said the words. I said what they wanted to say so I could go home. I felt like a robot. I sound like a robot on that tape. He said later, I don't even remember saying those words. And what was bizarre was like, so they got him, but his DNA did not match at the crime scene. So they had one guy implicate another guy. That guy implicated another guy. And they just kept pointing fingers at other people because the police told them to. And eventually there were four guys who falsely confessed, they recanted, but it still went to trial. And when you're in a jury and you hear a confession and you don't hear the hours of denial beforehand, you just hear the confession, that's ironclad for most jurors. That's all that's needed, even if the DNA evidence doesn't match. What's absurd was that Omar Ballard, I forget which year it was, Omar Ballard came forward later. And he confessed to being the one who raped and murdered Michelle Moore Bosco by himself. And the prosecution did not accept it and said they said, you can avoid the death penalty if you implicate the four other guys and say they did it, because they had egg on their face. They didn't want to fess up to the fact that they had wrongfully convicted these four guys. Now, later, I just found out this past year that all four have been released. They've been pardoned by the Virginia governor, and they're actually given a double compensation for their time in prison. But yeah, it's hard. You might think, but I have nothing to fear when I'm in an interrogation. But police interrogations, they follow a very systematic format that oftentimes can produce confessions even when the person has not committed a crime. They use something called the Reed technique, developed by John Reed, a Chicago police officer back in the 1950s. So there's a great video on here. I'm going to pick bits and pieces of it that have the actual confessions in them and walk you through kind of how it works. Once again, don't get in this position. Just don't say anything. Shut up. Any lawyer, if you talk to any lawyer, say, what's the advice you give someone if they're arrested? They'll tell you two words. Shut up. Don't say anything. Don't talk to anyone. Wait till I am there. I'll walk you through everything and help you with that. Because here's the thing. Our legal system is an adversarial legal system. It's the prosecution versus the defense. The prosecution kind of fights the defense and the truth is supposed to come out. But the problem is police officers see themselves aligned with the prosecution. And so you're not here with a neutral party trying to ascertain the truth. Many times if they think you did it, they're kind of an adversary. And so they're going to try to twist your words and try to get the truth out of you, because they're not trying to figure out if you did do it. And many times in an interrogation, they believe you did do it, and we're gonna find a way to prove it. So the video is called Why Cops Beat You in the Interrogation Room. I'll put a link to it in the description at trendhornpodcast.com. I'm just going to play clips from it and go through kind of this technique based on the read technique of how interrogations work. First is the comfort and baseline position. That's where the police officer is, you know, good cop, bad cop. It's good cop. It's basically, I just want to talk to you, and it builds rapport. And it also tells you, sees what you look like when you're telling the truth as a baseline to compare that to when an officer may think you're lying about something.
There's a plain donut there for you. I had a cereal bar, but if you get hungry or anything else, just let me know, okay? How come you got more than one middle name, you know?
I don't know. It's my uncle's and my grandfather.
I got three middle names as well. And that's really because my parents thought I was going to be an only child, so they named me after everybody. So I got named after a grandfather and two uncles. So I know what you're going through there, because my initials I get teased about.
So right there, what we have, so this is the comfort phase to determine what you're looking like at a baseline, as to build rapport. It's like, oh, this guy's my friend. You know, it's not someone who's come in ready to grill you. It's classic good cop, bad cop. But then the next thing an officer will want you to do before they begin the interrogation is to waive your rights. So if you're talking, you've already kind of done that, but they'll want you to formally do that to acknowledge and sign away your Miranda rights, so that you understand what you say right here and now, anything you say can and probably will be used against you in a court of law.
Let's do this. You sound like you want to talk to me, okay? And I want to hear what you have to say, but before I ask you any questions, you got to know your rights, okay? You have the right to remain silent. What this says here is that I've read you your rights. Do you understand them?
Yes.
Once you're
okay, so, and then the narrator goes on to explain more in that, but that's key, is that once you sign them away, they're gone. And sometimes an officer will say, I want to help you, but I can't help you until I talk to you, and I can't talk to you until you sign this paper acknowledging I've read you your rights. Don't sign anything. So I cannot sign that right now. I can't sign anything. I cannot talk to anyone until I speak to a lawyer first, please. And then just sit there, and then just wait. And the interrogation room, so you know, why can't people just do that? Interrogation rooms are designed to disorient you. They don't have windows. You sit in a corner in a fixed chair that can't move. There's nothing on the walls to distract you. There's no funny little cartoons on the bulletin board or pieces of paper around. It's a near austere room, no windows. You're in a fixed chair that can't move. Oftentimes the officer is sitting between you and the door. And so you feel trapped and cornered. And he's in a rolling chair, which allows him to be at a distance or to close in and be closer to you to kind of ramp up tension. So what happens is, after talking with you, if the police suspect that you have committed the crime, they will try to get you to confess. And they will begin that with a kind of with a direct confrontation. So what they're going to do here is, let's see, do I have that? Yeah, I do have that clip here. They're just going to start by, they're not going to ask if you did it. They're going to say, you did it. We know you did it. We have evidence that you've done this. And then we know you did this. You just don't bother denying it. We know you did this. It'll be accusation after accusation after accusation. And the police are allowed to lie. Courts have upheld that an officer has the right to lie and say, we saw you do this. We have video you did this. We have witness. They can make up evidence of a crime and say that we have this evidence, you did it. And that could be disorienting for people. Some people might think, well, if you have it on video, did I do it? I was drinking. Maybe I didn't realize what was happening. And you start to doubt yourself. So here's some examples of that.
Your vehicle drove up the side of Jessica Lloyd's house. Your boots walked to the back of Jessica Lloyd's house on the evening of the 28th and 29th of January. You and I both know you were at Jessica Lloyd's house, and I need to know why.
Has monitored, and I'm not going to tell you how, okay, just think about it, with today's technology, monitored what was going on in front of this residence that they were calling to complain about until police arrived. I can prove it. I can go in front of the judge and say, hey, look, bro, you want us to play this video? You want us to show you the fingerprint results? You want us to show you the GRE test on this gentleman?
I did not have that firearm in my hand.
Huh? You want us to show the GRE test, the graduate records exam? I remember taking the GRE to get into grad school, so I would love to see that guy's GRE test. But see, that's that they're allowed to make up stuff in an interrogation. Next, what happens is that when the person denies whether they're guilty or innocent, they will deny that they've done this. The officer will not allow them to vocalize those denials. They'll continually interrupt the person to not allow them to formulate the proposition that they didn't do this. They will just keep interrupting and kind of steamroll over you. Here's an example.
I'm giving you an opportunity.
I'm not lying.
Listen to me. I'm giving you
I
an opportunity.
I didn't hold that gun.
Listen
I
to
didn't
me.
Shoot
listen,
that gun.
Listen to
me. I did not have a firearm in my hand.
We can prove that. We can prove that. We're beyond that point, buddy. We're beyond that, man.
But I did not do what you think I did.
I know you did. We're past that. Okay. Yeah. We're past that.
So as they're talking, what they'll make you think that innocence or not committing the crime is simply not a valid option. Like, you're in this scenario, I'm talking to you, you cannot end this scenario by saying you did not do this. So they'll interrupt and continue talking. So you get this mindset like, oh, I can't get out of here by saying I didn't do this. I'm going to have to think of something else. And so what the interrogator will do at this point is present you one of two options. Like, look, you did this with a really bad evil motive that makes you a really, really bad guy and you're going to get the electric chair. Or you did this, but we understand why you would do this. It's understandable, and maybe you'll get off kind of lightly if you did it for this motivation. So they won't present you did it, you didn't do it. It's you did it for a really bad reason, or you did it for a good reason that's understandable, and they want you to ease into maybe choosing that reason.
It could have been an accidental discharge, okay? But when you don't, when you're completely denying that, then I got to think another way, bro.
I don't believe you're a cold-blooded killer, you know? I don't believe that at all. Nothing suggests that to me. I think you're a smart guy, and I think you got involved in a situation that you probably shouldn't have. There's a difference between you going in and saying, I'm going to kill somebody, and you going in, I'm trying to help somebody, and it goes bad. That's way different things there that we're talking about.
What other option is there? I don't think you want the cold-blooded psychopath option. I might be wrong, because don't get me wrong, I've met guys who actually kind of enjoyed the notoriety. Got off on it. I don't see that in you. If I saw that in you, I wouldn't be back in here talking to you, quite frankly. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you got me fooled. I don't know.
And then after that comes the confession. They look for a surrender position. You kind of put your head down, you're slumped over. It looks like you're ready to give up, and they move in closer and say, I think it's best for you to come clean. Do you want this to end the right way? And then the person confesses. Sometimes they confess they really did commit the crime, and they reveal and they have a guilty conscience and they just want to make it known. They don't want to go through a trial. They don't want to put people through a trial. But other times, in the case of false confessions, a person confesses because they get this idea, especially when minors are brought to police and I think it's terrible that a minor could be interrogated by a police officer without parental consent. In some states and jurisdictions, that's allowed. Minors are horrible at understanding the future. They do things. You know, you ask a teenager, why'd you do that? Oh, their front part of their brain isn't formed. They make terrible decisions. And so and that's what happened with Brandon Dassey in the Netflix Making a Murderer. He just, you know, confessed to something that he probably didn't do because he was told, like, if you just say this, you'll get to go home. He's like, well, I thought I got to go home. And they really do think that. I mean, adults think that. Here's a clip from Chris Ochoa from the Center on Wrongful Convictions. He talks about why he confessed to a crime that he didn't commit.
They, at one point, one of them grabbed my arm and tapped my arm, the vein, said, this is where the needle's going to go if you don't cooperate with us. At some point, he brought in pictures of a cell on death row, or so he said. It was a cell on death row. So if you don't cooperate with us, this is where you're going to live the rest of your life until you die. You will never get to hold anybody again. You won't get to hug your parents or whatnot.
So what happens is you start doubting yourself, like, they have evidence. I'm going to go either to death row or maybe I could get 10 years. I'd rather get 10 years than go to death row. I'll just confess whatever you want. Just remember, if you are arrested, say nothing. Close your mouth. The only words you should say is, I want to speak to a lawyer, please. And that will be a good thing to do. And it's good for everyone involved, including the police, because the police don't want to waste their time. The police, except, you know, unless someone's like a perverse maniac or something, they have consciences, they have moral codes. They don't want to arrest someone or put someone away who is innocent. Absolutely not. So you're not doing any harm by slowing down the process by asking for a lawyer. You're helping them because they're good-hearted people. They don't want to be party to prosecuting an individual who is innocent. And of course, it's good for you ultimately to do that. So just ask for a lawyer. And then if you are detained, calmly and politely assert your rights. I choose to exercise my right to remain silent, officer? Am I being detained? Officer, am I being detained? Am I free to go? And I don't consent to any searches today. So just remember that and, you know, pray for law enforcement, for judges, for people who work in the courts. They're an important part of our society. We need them to have a law and order. Pray for them, for their safety, their protection, and they have prudence and wisdom and guidance in always carrying out justice and not allowing injustice to occur. So I hope that these were just some helpful skills I gave you. Definitely go online. Look up Frontline has a wonderful PBS documentary on the Norfolk Four. You should have to go and check out. If I can find it, I'll put it in the description at trenthornpodcast.com. But I'll include the link to the video I shared with you here. The video is called Why Cops Beat You in the Interrogation Room. You can watch it in full. It's pretty interesting. So thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you liked today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.